Here we go. Hour one, G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan, and it is great to be back in here with you. We have a full 5 hours of sports content coming up with you here in the Nation General at your service, Eddie's. There's Broadus, the former Cowboy Scout, the Super Bowl champion. Lucius Alexander's in the Pimp Cup Master Control here, 75 and 635. Fix it to go. A full five flawless, like it's nothing. The man has it stuck on automatic. You got Eric Chiafalo and Zach Wolchuk, your nosebleed brothers, and Austin Nix is coordinating your video. So thanks for making us part of your day. Thanks for downloading that Odyssey app. It's always the ultimate backup, has instant rewind functionality. But it's great to be back here, you know, after missing.
It's good to see you, man.
Week and a half or so. I watched every minute of every soccer game since I worked, other than the watch party I was supposed to get to with you guys.
Yep.
I guess on that Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's right. That's so right.
I got honestly, it's probably best that you didn't show up.
Well,
we had tight quarters up there.
It was packed. It was okay, ridiculous.
So it was heated.
I get there like 10 minutes after kick because weaving through traffic and picking up my brother-in-law. And then I actually got to the venue, had to park like a quarter mile away.
Yeah.
And then we get there and the line's like out the door.
Oh, it's crazy.
And they won't let me cut the line. So I'm like, I'm missing the game now already.
Gosh.
So then I ran over to Pluckers. Same deal. Packed wall to wall with people.
Yeah.
Can't get a seat. So I brought it up on the satellite radio and listened to John Strong and what's-his-name call it as I hightailed back home for that win over Boston.
I don't blame you. I almost
Stu
bailed,
Holden?
Too.
Is that right? Stu
Holden? Doing a hell of a job. Yeah, he Stu and Holden. Landon Donovan have been great in the analyst department.
Okay, so I've been waiting for you to come back. What did you think about the disaster that was the Belgium match?
Oh, just totally outclassed. You know, I think maybe the Balogun red card reversal galvanized Belgium, made them angry and gave them a purpose. And they kind of like stole the initiative. Not only were they better, but they were the more energized team. We were like, I mean, it was pathetic the way the first goal went in. Watching the ball bounce in your own box. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's like, who is this team?
It was your guy Tim Ream just watching the ball.
I know. We were all like, yep, Gavin said this guy stunk.
Yes, I knew it was eventually going to end. And when it did, Tim Ream would be embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that happened. But several players, I felt like from Team USA, could have come off that pitch embarrassed. How'd you guys fare as Americans observing it?
We were pissed. I mean, but the Christian Pulisic stuff, really, I was irate. I mean, just a poor showing overall. The injury is a shame, but he's always hurt. I just didn't, you know, the hype of him being the greatest American soccer player of all time, I just don't think that he showed us that at all.
Yeah.
So to me, I called him extremely overrated, maybe the most overrated athlete in the history of my lifetime.
It was definitely a disappointing tournament. I thought he was really good until he got hurt against Paraguay. And then he was all right against Turkey when he came back for those 30 minutes. And then, damn it, he's injured again after maybe the worst 60 minutes he's ever played in a USA uniform against Belgium. He was just totally owned by their right midfielder and their right back.
Yeah.
And then he says, it's all good because now I have time to rest.
Everything's
going to be fine. Okay.
I mean, he's kind of got some Tony Romo to him, you know. And I thought that was, you know, played out once again. But since then, you know, I bounced back quickly, and I've just been enjoying all these games and, like, the run of dramatic stoppage time winners that we've seen. Like, 20 of the 60 winners that have happened in the second half have happened after 90 minutes.
Crazy.
Including the drama of Argentina. Three games in a row, I felt like, wow, we might be watching Messi's final World Cup game. You know, and then the way that they pulled that out and the things that England have done is just it's been an incredible tournament. And so the time off was perfectly timed for me. And now we are here getting ready for the semifinals out at AT&T Stadium. And we only got three matches left. So I hope everybody has enjoyed it as much as I have. Man, really enjoyed watching the Rangers keep their heads above water here. I know it's only 5-5 over the last 10 games, but to pull into the All-Star break as a result of clutch late hitting, giving away leads, but then figuring out a way to win.
Yeah.
Another one yesterday, and another one-run victory to be here at 49 and 47. It was like the win was a microcosm for the season up to this point, as far as starting well and you know, Higashioka solo shot there in the eighth, and then Brandon Nimmo's walk off in the ninth there. So it's been fun so far. And you know, I think at this point, if you're having conversations at the break with your leadership and your front office and your ownership group, you're talking about, we've done enough, haven't we? to at least be active participants in whatever All-Star break trade conversations there are to be had at this point?
I think we'll take where they are. You know, it's not necessarily the most impressive, but you're a game and a half up in your division. You're two games over 500. Absolutely. I think right now, just with the landscape of the American League, we might look back on it like we have the last couple of seasons and said it was silly why they do it. But I don't know how you could justify to the players in that clubhouse not going for it right now.
Yeah, they are a game and a half up on Seattle at the break. And, you know, I would say you look at it and say this has been a very frustrating 2.5 seasons. We have plenty of room under the competitive tax balance threshold. You know, let's get a veteran batter too. And if Seager cannot return in a meaningful way, you still feel okay about your lineup. That's what I want to see them do. Make it to where if Seager can't come back and be the all-star version of Corey Seager, we still feel pretty good about our lineup. And I think there's a lot of work to be done between now and then, because you would have to admit, while this last 3 weeks has been great, clawing back from four games under to two games over and then holding the line, you know, they've been lucky. lucky to get here. How you doing over there, Brian?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thank you, Gab. It's great to have you back. I just don't think that Seager's going to come back anytime soon.
No, I don't either.
I mean, I know you're getting back into this one, Dawson, but just kind of listening to people talk about his situation and all that,
yeah,
it sounds really, really severe what's going on.
It might end up being you just shut him down for the season.
Yeah, this might be – you might not have an opportunity to have him even back in the lineup.
Well, that's what my gut was telling me before I left.
You were bringing it up. I remember, and that's really – but the more that we were kind of – diving into stuff and talking
asking
about
people.
It, people are like, well, hey, let me tell you what I know here. Let me tell you what I know here. Let me tell you. And it doesn't sound particularly great, you know? So I think that we might be in a situation where this lineup is going to go forward in the second half without him being a part of it. I just don't feel like that it sounds like some pretty serious stuff going on with Corey Seager right now that the Rangers really aren't open to being talking about right now.
Okay. All righty. Well, still going to probably get healthy, have a good pitching staff. Yeah. Just make the playoffs.
Yeah. Right? Give yourself a shot.
Just give me that spark in the back of my head. Like, you know what? What if Eovaldi and DeGrom here go out in a series and just shut down the opposition? And what if Mackenzie Gore brings his best stuff and his command?
Get Monty back in a Ranger uniform? Can he channel 2023?
Yeah, just let that idea come alive a little bit there in the back of my head. Wings beat the Chicago Sky last night for their fifth straight win. They are 16-8. They are fourth in the West. It was their first of three games they're playing at the AAC this summer. And apparently it went quite well. And it could be their permanent home next season. But they got some swagger to them now. And it appears that we might be looking at the team with the best chance of doing something big here.
They might. I mean, Paige looked great last night. I thought AZ Fudd defensively was really good. I'm buying in on this wing squad. I mean, they have the fourth best record in the league. I think they do have a chance to at least make a conference final this year.
Okay.
If they get to the finals, should we have like a Mardi Gras Brian show up?
You want to?
Something like
absolutely.
That?
Hell yeah. Why not?
I'm on board with that.
I think we could have some fun doing that for the wings.
I mean, yeah, I
thought we were going to have the Stars, you know. I thought the Stars were going to be our Mardi Gras Brian situation, but just maybe the Wings. Maybe that's our avenue for fun.
I think we need to go check out some of these games, you know.
Especially
at the AAC.
You keep talking about that, and I keep talking about that, and we don't do it.
You know? Fair.
And you're right. I would go. I would absolutely go and hang out. I mean, our guy Walt's always there. Yep. Tobosh is always there.
He does like pre and post game for him.
Yeah, I mean, there's always folks
Nick
hanging
was out there last night.
There are always folks hanging out, man. We better get out there before this team starts putting together like 10, 12 wins in a row, and we can't get tickets or something like that. You know?
That would be awesome. I mean, right now at the AAC, I think they have two games that they're going to play there left. If they could get so big that it's had a chance to sell out, that would be something.
Fun.
I think we're a couple of years and maybe deep playoff runs away from getting that kind of interest. But just the fact that they're opening up the AAC and getting more fans in there than maybe they're projecting Arlington can hold. I think is there popularity outgrowing the digs they've played in Arlington for the last 4 or 5 years? I think that's a significant storyline. And it's just a fact that college women's basketball is so big and the league really can't hold all of the good players coming out of there. So you get so much star power like packed into these pro teams of household names. It's kind of like how the NBA and college basketball played off of each other in the 80s, that by the time you arrived, you were a big-time star. So for anybody paying attention to, you know, college hoops, and I think more and more sports fans are, getting a chance to watch Paige Beckers in an AZ Fudd or whoever it might be in your individual town, you got like two or three of those gals on every team. Okay, yes, World Cup semifinals tomorrow and Wednesday. Both games will be starting right as we go on the air following, I guess that this gives them like perfect primetime starts in Europe. I guess that's what this is.
Okay. We have a game tomorrow and then one on Wednesday?
Is that France and Spain tomorrow.
And then, and then the following day is England and Argentina. Okay.
Yeah, and okay. I think France has easily looked the best.
Yes, agreed.
Spain's defense has been incredible, though. One goal allowed against Belgium. Belgium could have beat Spain, though. Spain needed two bad goalkeeper plays in order to get follow-up tallies. England and Argentina, I think when it comes to possession-wise, Argentina out of these four is by far the lowest. But they're very comfortable kind of letting you have the ball, and they're so good defensively and they're so good at finishing. Maybe they don't have the center mids to dominate play like we're used to seeing from a nation in the caliber of Argentina, but they're very effective still.
They're very comfortable rescuing games.
Yeah.
They could be in a very dire situation, you know, and all of a sudden it's like you're looking up and they're running out of time and then they kind of figure things out. That switch flips and the next thing you know they're getting a goal right at the 90th minute and then they're getting another goal in extra time. I mean, it's just crazy how their last three or four games have been just, you know, hold on to your rear kind of games.
England and Argentina has been a similar type of story as well, though, because I feel like England has been on the ropes as well.
Yeah. And flirting with disaster.
They could have easily lost to Norway.
Yeah, Norway could have been up 2-0. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Jude Bellingham's been amazing the last couple of matches for England. He's been even better than Harry Kane has here lately.
The FIFA president Infantino saying that further expansion to a field of 64 teams will be considered before we get to the 2030 World Cup, and why not?
More money. Let's go.
It's been a smash success, and you know, I think the more the merrier for sure. So up next for Team USA is going to be these friendlies coming up in the fall, and then World Cup qualifying will start October of 2027. So that if you got the bug and you're like, okay, what happens next? The next meaningful games for making sure we can qualify for World Cup 2030 is coming up in about 15 months.
If you really want to, if you're just picking the soccer thing up, go find you an EPL team or one of those teams to pull for. And it's that way you could keep in, you could start to continue to learn about all the players and the young players and, you know, all the guys around. Like, these guys all are playing for countries. Watch when they all play together on the same team. You know, when you got the Norway guys playing with the England guys, and it's really cool. So if you're just new to soccer, man, go pick you out a team and then kind of follow that team and during the year, and you'll enjoy it at the end of the day.
I think local fans or local people would say, well, what about FC Dallas or Trinity, and support your local teams as well?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah.
But for my entire life, and this has been a thing for 25 years now, right around the 2002 World Cup is really when it took off in a big way. American fans have always wanted to watch European soccer, you know, and there are some great fan bases around MLS, but the next step is almost always adopting a European team. Yeah. And then maybe from there, like the next extreme, as far as being a diehard fan would be, you know, supporting your local team.
Right.
The locals
deserve
the same
your
thing.
Report. Your locals deserve report, your support, no doubt. But man, if you want to learn even more about this game worldwide, go grab you one of those teams in Europe, too.
All right, we got the champ coming up on the other side. Then Wolchuk's top 10 as we're rocking and rolling here with you full 5 hours on a Monday. Wolchuk, where are you taking us?
We have a fresh list that has dropped, the top 10 NFL coaches of all time. Do you agree? Did they get it right? Next on The Fan.
All right, welcome back. G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. We're talking Mavs with Kevin Gray coming up at 3 o'clock. We got Wolchuk's top 10 here in just a second. Let's go into the Pimp Cup. The G-Bag of the Day champ.
Yeah, this piece of audio will be going for two today at 5:30. It is a combo pack from the Nightcap with Shannon Sharp, Ocho Cinco, and Iso Joe. They had world champion boxer Shakur Stevenson on there as a guest, because he's supposed to be promoting the fact that he signed up with Zuffa Boxing, but they end up just falling apart. End up being a whole argument for like at least 8 minutes, bro. Yeah, real talk. They argued for 8 minutes. I'm not going to play the argument part, but I'll play this part where after they did argue, they try to have like a cordial conversation, but it just ended up being who can jump higher, who can run faster. My muscles are bigger than yours. I can bet more money than you can, and I can beat you in a sparring match.
It don't seem right, man. You man, jumped on Shakur. That man 130 pounds.
I'm like, man just chill, man. This is street fighting, man. We're not talking boxing. I am not just a boxer. I am from Newark, New Jersey. Oh, you better ask about me.
Them get knocked out too. Yeah. I don't know why y'all play y'all from New York and Jersey. Think y'all can't get forward.
Where you from?
Where the hell you from? I'm from Georgia, GA. Glenville.
I ain't never heard of that.
We'll be on the map if I whip your ass. We got two Hall of Famers, but I'll be the one that whipped you. Your first
keep
loss.
Keep dreaming, man. You're going to need more than those steroids, man.
There ain't no steroids here, bro. Don't shortchange me.
Yeah, no, that's good, man. Great episode. I think they're still going back and forth with each other on Twitter.
They still are.
Yeah.
Gosh. Just keep it going.
Got him. more for 5:30.
Okay. All right, looking forward to that. 5:30.
I like that haircut you got, man.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, it looked like you had a shootout with the feds at the Bundy Ranch.
I think you look pretty good.
Yeah,
guys
like
down
it.
The street doing it for me. I was wondering though. He held up the mirror, and it was at an angle. I thought I saw a bald spot. Do I have a bald spot starting back there, Chief? Because I saw my brother for the first time in like a year.
He was like, woo.
His bald spot exploded.
Oh.
How am I doing?
Yours is close, bro.
No, I'm just kidding.
Bald
spot.
Yeah, 100% off bald spot.
Don't do that, bro.
Still strong.
Do that.
I'm serious.
Okay.
I'll take a picture if you want.
I had that feeling when he wheels you around and hands you the mirror.
Yeah.
And I said, what? Oh, my goodness.
Shining back there.
I couldn't wait to get to my truck. And, like, I'm taking pictures with my cell phone on top of my head. I'm like, man, the follicles of the gods might be extinct.
Make sure you delete those photos just in case your girl goes through your phone and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah. No, I have to because I was looking through my gallery like an hour later and I realized how pathetic it was to be taking pictures of a supposed bald spot, so I'll delete those. Now, here's Wolchuk with his top 10.
All right, we're getting to the top 10 best NFL coaches of all time. This will be a CBS Sports list as 6 of their NFL reporters have voted on the greatest coaches in league history, and we'll see if you agree with this. Most likely, you won't, but Gavin, guess what's back? Popcorn chicken at KFC.
Yes.
It has returned
in
all of its glory.
Chicken.
It is back, and I guess KFC was just getting inundated with a bunch of emails and angry calls, like, why'd you take it away? Bring it back. Well, they did.
It's the herbs and spices for me.
Really sets it off.
Yeah.
It's delicious. Is it original recipe? Is that what they're using, or is it different?
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes sense. I mean, it was 34 years ago that I rolled out some of the first batches of
by
KFC
accident?
Popcorn Magic. Chicken. No, we were one of the trial stores.
Were you?
You know,
that's cool.
Came in this blue tube, kind of like the sausage does.
Mm.
You know, like the big long tubes, ground beef and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Threw that out into the batter, threw that into the fry mix, and boom, it was born.
It was born. The KFC popcorn chicken. We also got the 99 Club. It's been unveiled for Madden 27. I don't even dabble in Madden anymore, man. I had to retire the sticks a long time ago, I feel like. I used to love it. I used to be like, as a kid in high school, you know, you're waiting midnight. There's release. You go to GameStop. You pick it up. You're up all night playing with your buddies. Now it's like, dude, I can't anymore.
Single Bachelor Wolchuk right now would still be on the sticks.
Probably.
It's just simply that life has taken a turn with wife and kiddos.
I think
That's simply what happened.
But I can't say that
I would have a console in my crib right now.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the collateral damage.
I've got the console. Not that I use it much, but I do every once in a while for like FIFA shots, or I would play Warzone when that was happening. That was really popular, what, like 10 years ago now, 7 years ago. But Madden, they kind of started to mess with the gameplay. And then the franchise mode, they took away. Just like some of the things that I loved about it, they tweaked and changed. And I don't know, it wasn't the same. Yeah. And maybe I just started to just not be good anymore.
Yeah, that'll do it.
The game passes you by. And I think that might happen with Madden.
That's what the online experience will do to you. It'll humble you real quick, you know. And you get out there and thinking you can play a game, and then you're playing against the entire world.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You're getting your doors blown.
I'm online. This 12-year-old kid is just like destroying me.
You got to be
no internet connection.
Yeah, no internet.
Just you and your buddies.
Just a couple of buddies that you know you can tear their ass up, invite them over all the time.
Absolutely terrible. But Myles Garrett, Matthew Stafford, Ja'Marr Chase, Josh Allen, Rockwall's own Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and then Trey McBride are the Madden 99 club members. Patrick Mahomes, of course, also is. But I think those were the guys that officially have gotten their 99 club for the first time. So congratulations to those individuals. All right, let's keep the NFL conversation going. Best head coach in the history of the sport. And with Bill Belichick, obviously at one point, he might still be number one on this list, but I think that would have been a common answer for a lot of people. Has he tarnished his reputation and his resume a little bit?
By coaching North Carolina?
Yeah, just the way things ended.
No.
We don't look at that
all. He is this generation's version of Tom Landry.
Okay.
And I say that with respect to Coach Landry as well, because I think he's top 10 as well. It very, very similar how they both kind of got their starts. Defensive guys, defensive-minded coaches, maybe not successful right out the rip. But then all of a sudden, they're winning championships, building teams the way they did. It ended very similar for Belichick. He started drafting at the end, and he was missing on players. Same thing happened to Landry. Landry had control over the draft, 87, 88, and it just didn't work out. Belichick, very, very similar. So how their career paths both have been kind of intertwined. If you look at Landry, had like 20 consecutive winning seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Belichick was up there too with a large number. I think Mike Tomlin's in there as well with a number of consecutive winning seasons. But yeah, I don't think Bill Belichick has tarnished his image by going to North Carolina and coaching at all.
What about the fact that he had a defensive coordinator and a special teams coach being an offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator?
There was some ridiculousness going on too with Landry at the end. I mean, when these coaches, when it goes,
it really goes.
It goes. You're loyal to coaches. You don't want to fire anybody. You don't want to make any changes. Like I say, I think that Tom Landry and Bill Belichick their careers are very, very similar, and like two of the best coaches that I've ever seen in my life.
Well, here are your honorable mentions, the ones that didn't quite make the top 10. I'll start at Bud Grant got Texan. Bud Grant is
Bud
on
Grant
the list.
Was outstanding at Minnesota.
He's 19. He was 19 on the list. Tony Dungy was 20. Yeah. You've got Weeb Eubank at 18. Yeah. Hank Stram of the Chiefs at 17.
What was that name you said? Weeb?
Weeb.
W-E-B-B.
Never heard of that guy.
Weeb Eubank is synonymous with two of the most important games in the NFL's first 50 seasons.
He won the Super Bowl III with the Jets and the Colts. That was when the Jets were like 16.5-point underdogs.
Yeah,
and then the first time the AFL beat the NFL in anything.
That 58 championship game, 23-17 Colts over the Giants.
He was a head coach of the Colts.
Yeah, with Johnny U. Hank Stram at 17. You got to keep matriculating the ball down the field,
well,
boys.
I tell you what, Hank Stram, though, is interesting because at Kansas City he was outstanding. At the Saints he was god-awful. He was at a horrible, horrible time even doing anything productive in New Orleans.
16, Mike Shanahan.
I think that 16 might be a little low for Mike Shanahan, to be honest with you.
15 is Guy Chamberlain. Most successful player coach in NFL history.
Guy Chamberlain.
9-year playing career. Coincided with the legendary 6-year coaching career. He won 6 championships, including 4 NFL titles. Now, we got to go back. 1922, he became a player coach for the Canton Bulldogs. During his 3 years with the team, the Bulldogs won 3 consecutive NFL titles while becoming the NFL's first dynasty. Jimmy Johnson at 14 on the list.
Never stayed anywhere long enough.
13, Bill Parcells.
What was that other guy that was a player coach? What position did he play? I'm always curious about that. Like, yeah, pass it to me.
Yeah. It does not say what position he played.
You just call your own number every time.
Yeah, yeah. Guy Chamberlain.
I'm open, bro.
Yeah. Guy Chamberlain.
Guy Chamberlain.
I always hit lead off on the softball teams I managed.
Yeah, that's a head play. I like that. In 2025, the name Guy ranked 1,637 in the U.S., with about 103 boys given the name, okay, or roughly 1 in or 60 per million births. So I was wondering if we still name our sons Guy.
Guy? I only know
There's
one guy.
There's a young boy in our neighborhood named Guy.
Okay. Like, for real.
Yeah.
Buddy Guy.
He doesn't go to school.
No, of course not. His parents didn't either.
He doesn't go to school.
Doesn't go to school, I promise.
There's only one guy that I've ever met, Guy Frazier. Shout out to Guy. He's an awesome dude. But defensive end and halfback, Guy Chamberlain, played both offense and defense.
Of course he did, yeah.
He's like, all right, we're going to run the ball 40 times a game.
You're not better than me.
12 on the list is John Madden.
And then 11. Really short career, only 10 years as an NFL head coach.
Just on the outside looking in is Curly Lambeau. Didn't make the top 10, but Curly comes in at 11. Yeah. Tom Landry.
Saved the Packers.
Tom Landry's at 10 on the list of the top 10 best NFL coaches of all time as voted on NBC or CBS Sports. 9, and I don't know if you can put him ahead of Landry, Joe Gibbs.
I couldn't put Joe Gibbs. Joe Gibbs is an outstanding coach. I can't put him ahead of Coach Landry, no.
8, Andy Reid.
Andy Reid deserves to be higher, and I'm not saying that because he's a friend. Andy Reid has over 300 wins as a coach in the salary cap era. When his roster's turning over, 25, 30% every year, and having to adjust that, any coach that coached in the salary cap era, I'd say Belichick, Andy Reid, those guys, they definitely have my attention. So Andy needs to be higher than this, and it's not because I worked with him. Andy's a really, really good coach. What, 100 wins, obviously, in
both spots now. I mean, he won 140 with the Eagles.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah, exactly.
He's won 70% of his regular season games with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And that's not just a Mahomes thing. I mean, the dude was winning 10 to 12 games a year with Alex Smith at quarterback.
He's winning games without throwing touchdowns to wide receivers.
It's crazy.
It's nuts.
7, the Knoll Road, Chuck Knoll.
Chuck Knoll, yeah, he deserves to be on this list, absolutely.
6. The NFC Championship trophy is named after him. It is George Halas.
Papa Bear Halas. Yeah, I mean, was it 8? I think 8 NFL championships or something like that.
Yeah, he was also a player coach. I guess this was a thing in the 20s. A lot of player coaches there. But, yeah, he had a hell of a run. I mean, his record, he had 318 wins, which stood until Don Shula ended up surpassing him for the winningest head coach of all time. But incredible. I mean, the NFL championships that he was able to have, and then once they merged as well, he continued that. Don Shula at 5, he is the winningest coach of all time right now, 347. Also, the undefeated team, 17-0.
Yeah.
4, Paul Brown.
Wow, I would have taken Paul Brown is not a better coach than Tom Landry.
Okay.
I would have put Paul Brown, if you said number 10, I would have put Paul Brown at number 10.
He had the run of 7 championships over a 10-year span.
Yeah.
He had Otto Graham quarterback.
Yeah.
And in each of his 10 seasons, the Browns made a championship appearance. They won 4 straight All-America football conferences before joining the NFL in 1950. But, that's a tough.
No,
one.
Great resume, but I just don't see him better than Tom Landry. I really don't.
3 top 3 NFL head coaches of all time according to CBS Sports. Bill Walsh at 3.
This is very deserving. Yes.
I mean, geez, just what he did for the sport, the offense, the West Coast offense.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those Niners teams are unbelievable.
He helped Paul Brown win games as the OC at Cincinnati. Yeah.
Still running his stuff.
Yep.
How many other schemes were invented 50 years ago still alive today?
Vince Lombardi comes in at number 2. Gosh.
Vince Lombardi, to show you how good Vince Lombardi was, he went to the Washington at that time, the Redskins, And for 1 year, like, they were a horrible team, and then all of a sudden they were found a way to win. They had, like, a winning record. It's very reminiscent of Parcells coming in and doing what he did for us in the early 2000s. But, yeah, Vince Lombardi, and I'm not saying this again because of working in Green Bay and all that, but what he did for the National Football League at the time, his the techniques and all that stuff, the scheme, the running plays, things, the toughness. Yeah, Vince Lombardi is well-deserved at that spot.
I mean, heck, 9-1 all-time in the postseason.
Yeah.
And he never had a losing record.
He only lost to the, I think in 1960, he lost to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yep.
And that was a really good team. Greasy Neal was the head coach.
Greasy Neal.
Was the
That's
head
a
coach
ball.
In Philadelphia.
Greasy Neal.
Yeah.
But number one, the greatest head coach.
I'd like to have a name Greasy.
I know.
No thanks.
In NFL history is Bill Belichick. Yeah. Most successful coach of the 21st century, has two more Super Bowl wins than the next head coach, second all-time in career wins with 333, third all-time in just regular season wins with 302. Yeah. He mastered the salary cap era.
There you go.
And his secret sauce was acquiring veterans from other teams who found the fountain of youth in his Patriots locker room with Rodney Harrison, Cordy Dillon, Randy Moss, Wes Welker, and Darrell Revis, just to name a few. So I guess, I mean, like, the draft, that was never exactly his forte, but he did do a good job of finding some undrafted gems and then making the most of the aging veterans.
How many Super Bowls have we played? We're getting close to 60 now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Something like that. He's won 8 of them. That's a pretty good percentage.
It's pretty unbelievable.
As a head coach and as an assistant. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that's pretty good.
Speaking of coaches, did you guys cover that Sean Payton story from last week from Seth Wickersham?
Yeah. I meant to ask Sean if that was true. I meant to do that.
I mean,
do
I don't think Wickersham's ball-sacking anybody.
No, I don't think so either. But I meant to ask Sean if that was true. I forgot to do that.
That is a crazy story.
Maniacal.
Yeah.
Bro.
I think I'm going to step down and just be an assistant.
That's who I want running my football team, though.
Right?
You think Belichick would have done that? You think he would have accepted that just like hand-me-down patronizing offer?
Hand-me-down robe.
I don't think so. Probably not. No. All right, we got to run. We got college football Darty coming up next. Chief, where are you taking it? Yeah, former coach gets dunked on, plus some arch propaganda next in the nation. All righty, welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up at 3 o'clock, Kevin Gray, All City. We'll be talking Mavs Summer League with him. Time now for college football Darty with the Chief. Yeah, man, the season's right around the corner. Let's get after it right after this.
Looky here. Mr. Cold Turkey put a mini booze bottle in his headset.
I've never filmed any of you guys when you're using the bathroom, so I don't know what faces you make when you're doing that.
Special teams, fucking joke.
I want them never to say our name again!
Well, I don't get... Ray Van Cole.
Don't get me started, love. I've had too much stress.
How about this, man? Jeremiah Smith, we know that he has been hyped up in a huge way, and he's delivered time and time again through his first two seasons as a wide receiver at Ohio State. You couldn't draw it up any better physically. The dude is just ridiculous. And he might have been a number one overall pick in each of the last two drafts, even though he wasn't eligible to come out. Like, this is as hyped up of a wide receiver as I can remember in college football, and he's delivered. He really has, so much so that I was actually kind of taken aback by this. I saw that Jeremiah Smith is pretty close to breaking all-time Ohio State records in so many different categories. He's 39 receptions away from breaking the all-time receptions record at Ohio State. And he's only played two seasons. Wow. You know, I feel like there was a stretch where they had probably really, really dominant wide receivers that were playing all 4 years. But you got 39 receptions away from breaking that record. He's only 341 receiving yards away from breaking the all-time receiving record at Ohio State. And he's 9 touchdowns away before he breaks the all-time receiving touchdowns record at Ohio State. I mean, he had 15 touchdowns his freshman year, and he had 12 touchdowns last year. So, I mean, he has just been totally ridiculous through two seasons. It's 163 catches, over 2,500 yards receiving, and 27 touchdowns.
Jeez.
So he's right there getting ready to probably own all of the receiving records at Ohio State when it's all said and done. Mm. And he's in store for what I would imagine to be a pretty dang big season. Julian Sain, now with a little bit more experience under his belt, tossing him the ball, and they still got great other players around him from a receiver standpoint. So just thought that was really dang impressive that he is that close. I mean, it could just be a few games in before he breaks two of those three records. Nine touchdowns will probably take a little bit of time, but he's had 15 and 12 in his first two seasons when it comes to touchdowns and receptions. So cannot wait for the draft process next year when you guys are studying him up. And
Broadus
is making all-time type comparisons like Bijan Robinson, Barry Sanders. Nailed it. And now we get Jeremiah Smith. I can't wait to see what that comp is going to be because he's just a physical freak show. Now, I saw from On3 Sports, we have the toughest 2026 college football schedules. Mm-hmm. This matters. And it sucks if you're an Arkansas Razorback fan.
Yeah, I think we went through this on CBS Sports, and it was like 7 out of the 10 were all SEC schools.
Yeah, the SEC is definitely dominating when it comes to the toughest schedules. OU has the second hardest schedule in the entire country. So I know, Wolchuk, you were pretty heavy in your optimism for
OU. Over 7.5 wins, I think it's pretty doable.
Over 7.5 wins, I think, is definitely doable. But for Sooners fans that are trying to get that double-digit victory this
playoff
season
again,
you will have earned it if you do it, because they're saying you have the second toughest schedule in all of college football next season. And then Texas is third. So Texas, OU, Arkansas, those are your top three most difficult schedules. Kentucky, Ole Miss round out the top five. Your LSU Tigers, Broadus, sit at 11.
Yeah.
The 11th most difficult schedule in college football this year. Texas A&M is 9. Okay, so those are all the main prominent schools there. But
how many do you have? The top 10, you said?
I have the top 20.
You have the top 20. Can you give me the top 10? I'm just making sure SEC. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, so it's Arkansas with the most difficult, OU at 2, Texas at 3, Kentucky 4, Ole Miss 5, Mississippi State 6, Florida 7, Ohio State 8, A&M 9, and the South Carolina Gamecocks with the 10th most difficult schedule in college football.
So it was nine out of the top 10 were SEC schools. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Just means more.
Who was the only one there that you said?
Ohio State.
Ohio State, yeah.
But then, like, 11 through 15 is LSU, Missouri, Auburn, Tennessee, and Alabama. So, yeah, the SEC schedules are pretty dang difficult this year.
Kind of felt like last year, though, that maybe the Big Ten was probably the best conference in football.
Yeah, I mean, that continues to be the conversation. Which one is better? I think the Big Ten at the top is better. The SEC, I believe, has more depth in terms of just even their bottom programs are still pretty solid. But the top of the Big Ten, I don't think it's something you can really argue at this point. Over the last few years, that has been the most dominant conference. Now, we have a couple of clips to play. I would like to start with an all-time dunking here from Paul Feinbaum.
Oh, wow.
He was at the, I believe it was the Barrett Sports Media, like, audio summit where he has, like, an entire weekend dedicated to prominent media members coming in and just doing conferences. And so they're on the stage, they're answering questions, and this was Paul Feinbaum dunking on Brian Kelly.
Spending 20 minutes with Brian Kelly for three consecutive years every Monday. I think I would rather have a colonoscopy on the stage right now without anesthesia. It's that painful.
Can you say anything more mean than that?
That sounds awful.
Wow. He is alleging that he is willing to strip down butt naked on a stage in front of thousands of people.
Well, he might be covered by a blanket, but still.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
The humiliation of going through an intimate medical procedure like that by most itself. Intimate.
With no anesthesia. He's awake the entire time. Ooh. He would rather do that than spend 20 more minutes conversing with Brian Kelly.
Yikes.
Former LSU Tiger head coach. That is just incredible, dude.
Tip of the cap to my Notre Dame friends who are probably listening. They warned me about this one. They said the minute when he is hired, they go, good luck.
Yeah, you're going to hate life with this guy.
He's just a jerk.
Good luck with all that. Yeah.
Okay. So now we'll close things down here in the Darty with our buddy Nate Tice.
Hey.
Nate Tice was talking with the Pro Football Focus fellas, and they were talking about the quarterback class that is going to be coming out in the draft next year, and college football is littered with hyped up quarterbacks right now, for sure. And hopefully they all meet the moment and it can be a ton of fun. But Arch Manning, of course, is at the top of that list. This is Nate Tice just giving you the scouting report, and he's quite the fan of Arch Manning.
He just has tools that are the rare tools. Like, I think he's a really good athlete, an excellent athlete, I even say. I would say his arm is good to very good, but not elite strength, but well above good. And I do think also is that he throws one of the best deep balls I've ever seen. He has the things that I look for as a number one pick, which is, can you create explosive plays with your arm and legs? And he can. And on top of it, he's not, yes, he can create and do all the stuff off platform. His sense of timing, how he moves in the pocket, he's tough as all get out, which really matters in the NFL because pockets are so muddy. And so you get these really tight pockets and you have to kind of like bounce around and throw sidearm. He can do that already. And he's a perfect example of results weren't indicative of his process or even just box score stats and losses. I would say you watch the Florida game. It's actually very impressive when you watch it back. A game that a lot of people have said he would play terribly and he got hurt in was against Kentucky. You watch that back, it's so impressive what he was doing that night, and he got no help. So, again, that's where process can lead to that stuff. So I think he's got all the goods. Like, I've been struggling to find a great comparison for him. You know, there's some Drake May there. I would think May, I think, had a little more juice on his arm on a line drive, but they both had that deep ball. They both can create. I think Arch is a little bit better in moving the pocket, which is kind of cool. But it's a very exciting kind of group of skills and traits that can even get better this year. Mm.
So he's all in on Arch Manning, and he was talking about how he would have taken him over Fernando Mendoza in this year's draft. And that was a year that wasn't overly successful there for Arch, but with whatever Nate Tice sees, and Tice is really good. Like, he was a quarterback. His dad, of course, Mike Tice, was a coach offensively in the NFL for a long time, and he's done a pretty good job when you track the way that he evaluates these quarterbacks. Like, he was a Drake May guy in a big way over even Caleb Williams at the time when they were coming out together. But he evaluates quarterbacks pretty impressively, and he's all in on Arch Manning. So that should give Longhorns fans a lot of excitement.
Nate was a quarterback?
He was.
At Wisconsin, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Wisconsin. And then he was like a practice squad, just kind of bounce around the NFL for a couple of years. But he's been in media for longer now than he was in the NFL.
I mean, that means something, doesn't it, for as far as the credibility of your report? If Arch Manning wants to run, then I would be excited about bringing him into my NFL situation. Mm. You know, especially with how important quarterback sneaking is on third and short, fourth and short. Like, the added value there is pretty significant, and I think Arch is – I would just say – how do you come out on a guy that you say has all the traits, but maybe doesn't show you the intangibles as much?
I this is where I disagree with him. I think the underneath stuff, the quick game stuff, I think there's really good accuracy there. His intermediate ball and the long ball, I totally disagree with him on that. Mm-hmm. I think there's times when you watch Arch Manning stand in the pocket and make throws. He, you know, we talk about throwing from different slots, different arm angles and stuff like that. Like, there are games where he is just wildly inaccurate. And I think where you were going with, if you tell me Arch Manning is going to run and be tough and, you know, and make people pay that way, I'm totally on board with you. But for him to say deep ball, intermediate ball, stuff like that, this is the biggest problem with Arch Manning is, and I think Arch Manning doesn't always see the field all that great. I think there are times when you watch him, he tends to get locked on receivers, and you could see throws where he will throw to a guy that is clearly covered. And if you're not always accurate, then it turns into like a ball that's deflected or incomplete pass. But I think Arch is a good quarterback. I don't agree with him about all the praise that he put on him in this particular report.
You'd rather have the Ohio State receiver?
I would rather have another quarterback.
Yeah.
No, I mean, doubt. if we're just talking quarterbacks, mm-hmm. I would just rather have another quarterback. And so that's kind of how I look at that. I just think there's the inconsistencies of him throwing the football are what gives you the most problems, and I don't think he always sees the field as well as he needs to see it.
Very interesting. All right, we got one down, four to go here on an MLB All-Star Week Monday here, Home Run Derby tonight. Kevin Gray, All-City, talking Mavs Summer League with you coming up next in the Nation.